Welcome to another episode of the Family Futures podcast series, Pondering Pods. If you have a topic you'd like to know more about, you can email us with your suggestion at contact@familyfutures.co.uk.
Hi everyone, my name is Jeff Edson. I'm a social worker at Family Futures, so I'm one of the members of staff who assesses prospective adopters and joins them on that journey through that into family finding, into having a child placed with them, and beyond to be a sort of part of that professional support network.
Hi, and I'm Phil Kane, and I do the same work as Jeff, and I'm a social worker, and I'm the team leader for the Permanency Service.
So Phil, last time we were speaking, we were having a chat about ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. We thought a little bit about how those are categorised, how they are not prescriptive of a child's future. And we've come together this time to have a think about neglect, what that is, and similarly to the ACEs, what can be the impact of neglect on a child's future. So just if I say that neglect in terms of the children that we are able to place for adoption, sort of what comes to mind first in terms of what does neglect mean?
I think neglect is a word that everybody uses a different title, neglected to do this or forgot to do that, whatever. I think that with the children that we're with, it usually starts with the basic needs. Mm. So the stuff that often we take for granted, food, shelter, basic needs, clothing, toiletries, being bathed, having a place that's clean and tidy. So I think that these are the hallmarks of neglect. And there's usually a reason why that a child lives in a neglectful household. Right? And that, for me, you would locate that in the ACEs. So that might be domestic violence or single parent households or mental illness, drugs, alcohol, all the different things, all those things that are preoccupying the parent that's not providing the needs or making the child the priority. So therefore, the basic needs that have been neglected.
Yeah.
I think that's where we start. And the fact is that we look at all those different things, and I think that the average person is shocked to find that these things are actually happening, that a child will be living in an unhealthy environment.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I know that an unhealthy environment can be, well, there's animals in the house and there's feces lying about. Sometimes there's alcohol or there's drugs that are lying around the house.
Yeah.
All those different things that are hazardous for the child. Then we're starting to step up from neglect.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things that comes to mind for me in thinking about neglect in sort of the social work, social care sphere is the point that it's actually one of the broadest categories of harm, one of the most prevalent alongside other forms of maltreatment as underpinning the reasons why children might be meeting that threshold and for social workers to have to go to court and have to seek care orders and removals of children from birth families. And exactly as you say, to an extent in terms of those basic needs which are being neglected, an extent which would horrify a lot of people, sadly, in terms of meeting that threshold of court proceedings. Would you think it helpful to break down sort of some of those areas of neglect for people? So sort of you mentioned home conditions. I wonder if you'd want to say any more about sort of other forms of neglect, perhaps.
Sorry,
no, go on.
I was just going to say, when you mentioned meeting the thresholds,
yeah,
if you could explain what that means and what things meet the threshold and what things don't.
Well, yeah, I was worried. I was about to talk about that and I thought I'd turn it into a ramble because in terms of social work practice, most social workers would say to one another, oh, neglect's one of the hardest things to evidence.
Yeah, no. I think that when we go to court, there's this thing called the threshold. The threshold is what we call significant harm. I think we talked about that last time round as well. Mm. The significant harm is where there is concern about the safety of a child. And significant harm is often categorised in physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, and neglect, right? And then, but the neglect is sort of covers an awful lot, right? So you would imagine that if a child was in a household where they've been physically abused, right, the likelihood of them being neglected would feel higher because they're not even thinking about what their needs and what's, why a child is being hit and being in that environment, right? So it could feel emotionally neglectful, and that would fall under the term of emotional harm. Say for sexual abuse, what is usually neglect is there when we do have things like there's domestic violence, we've got drugs and alcohol, we've got mental illness, things that are preoccupying the parent that they cannot look after the child, and the parent is such that they are, that child is in the care of the parents, there is risk of significant harm, right? So that social workers have got to prove to the court that they have reached the threshold, right? Is that if the state was not to intervene, that child remaining in the care of a parent would be at risk of significant harm. And the care of that child is not what would be expected of your average parent. So at the end of the day, we all compare it differently, but it's about how that impacts upon the child. So that's when we talk about significant harm. And wherever we go, we look at significant harm, neglect will be there.
Mm-hmm.
Physical neglect, we would see it in the fact that the child is coming out of school hungry. The child is coming in unkempt. Other kids don't want to sit beside the kid because of smell.
Mm-hmm.
They're falling asleep in class. These are the sort of telltale signs that a school would be picking up and talking to them. Hopefully the parent, you know, when they're talking to the parent, but it's unlikely the parent would be there, the child's coming in late at school, there's absences, there's things like that, there's things that, all the hallmarks that something's not going right, there's no routine, there's no stability, there's other things going on. So therefore, the neglect would come out in different ways. So I think that we've got to look at that, and then if, for argument's sake, is that who is visiting the house, so there could be a health visitor that's coming in and finding the place unkempt. It's unlike the cigarette butts lying over the place. There's often, many a case, there's dog feces, or cat feces, and cat litter trays all over the place. Kids walking about barefoot and amongst all this stuff. The place not being clean. Pots and pans in a hazardous position. Do you know what I mean? Lived. So these are what we regard as neglectful, and it gets back to what would be expected to and how you would care for your child.
And the process, I think that there's also a misconception that the social worker can just come in and be like, you're neglecting your child, that child's coming into care. But is it quite a process of the social worker going into the house, finding that things aren't how they should be, then trying to sort of rectify that situation with the parents, so that child is living in that situation
for a prolonged period of time.
Is what I'm getting at. The kind of explanation that it's not like, oh, you're neglecting your child, we're going to go to court and all of that. It's a process.
But if we just said that what we just looked up at, the kid came out of school, unkempt, dirty, hungry, all this kind of stuff, the school are concerned. And if we speak to the parents, and the parents might not actually engage, you go to the school gates, they get in and get out. Mm-hmm. And often the parents had a poor experience of school themselves and don't really want to really engage with schools and things like that, you know. Yeah. So there's a knock-on effect here all the time. But if a referral was made to social services or children's services, is that they would go out and carry out an assessment. And if they felt there was a need, there's a sort of a tier thing back to the significant harm thing, is that the local authority, the social services, always want to work with the family, you know, to help the parents to be actually achieve good enough parenting for that child to remain. So always working to support families to stay together. Right? Often, the stereotype of social workers is that they remove children, is it? But the opposite is what we're after.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, unless there was something that was really, really concerning, right, is that to be trying to work on what we call a children in need plan, right? So we're trying to work in partnership with the parents to improve their parenting and make the referrals to different things to support that parent in the community to make good their parenting and to see incremental changes. There could be the fact is that concerns about that child has been physically harmed or there's been domestic violence issues that have been really traumatic for a child or whatever, and the child is put on a child protection plan. So the plan is higher, it's more intense, and it's looking for an outcome of the parents improving their parenting to a point. It's what we call stepping it down, right, from child protection down to children in need. But also, if the children in need plan is not working, it may have to be stepped up because the more we get involved, we're actually seeing that neglect or unkemptness is actually, we're starting to find that there is domestic violence at home, or there is drug and alcohol issues that are actually becoming more severe and actually impacting on. So it culminates, if it goes wrong, we end up in court. And the local authority are saying that if they didn't intervene, this child would be at risk of significant harm. So, and in a nutshell, I'd say that neglect is weaving through this. And often, back to what we talked about ACEs, is that in December, is that you'll find a combination. It's very, very rare that you'll find one thing in isolation.
Mm.
So you'll have, if it's neglect, and then there's domestic violence, or there's drugs, or there's alcohol, there's mental health, there's things like that, there's physical abuse, there's coercion, all the different things, and they don't live in isolation.
Yeah.
And usually at the bottom, and there it's always neglect, and that could be physical neglect, and also emotional neglect is similar to emotional harm, whereas that child's emotional needs have been neglected as much as a physical and basic need. So we don't always see it as obviously, but it still is important.
I think that just gives people a good picture of the journey that child's been on even before they've had planned for adoption, and essentially how long that was going on for while that child was on the child in need plan, and then it kind of moved up a tier. And also children, the idea that children are given a planned adoption for a reason,
mm-hmm.
and you, all children with a plan of adoption, this might be my board, will have experienced significant harm because they would have had to meet a threshold to be adopted.
Almost all,
and
yeah.
I think that's what a lot of people struggle to get their heads around, like maybe, you know, there'll be children obviously with less needs and higher needs, but there is a threshold and
it's got to be achieved. And I think that when the adopters are looking at what we call the child permanence plan, that's when you're going to find out all about that child's history. And should document all the different types of intervention that's going on. And I think, I don't know if you agree, Jeff, but at times you can look back and say it's been too optimistic, right? It's that we've given mum and dad chances and we've put them onto programmes and what we call disguised compliance, is that say they're going to do things when they're fact. Once their back's turned, nothing really, it just goes back down to where we were. And then we go in and work again to try and bring it up. But in actual fact, the what I would call sometimes the drip of neglect is still going on,
yeah.
Right? And it gets to a point where something happens and then the crisis and then the child comes into care. So I think at times for our adopters, they can look back and say, God, why didn't this did not move in? But that's easy because there's hindsight and that's because decisions have been made. But when you're in that life dynamic, it's not always easy. Because you're working with parents, you want to be optimistic for parents, but you've got to think of the best needs of that child. And you, at times, can get drawn into often enmeshed and really difficult and complicated family relationships.
One of the many, because there are always many reasons why cases go on for so long until people finally recognise that the threshold has been met in court and removal of a child from his birth family is the appropriate course of action. There are serious case reviews. The length and breadth of the country, and every single one mentions poor communication between agencies. And what we know is of the myriad types of neglect, the plethora of ACEs that run through those and other forms of maltreatment of a child, alongside them is typically poor or patchy school attendance and patchy, if any, appearance at necessary medical interventions for a child, whether a GP, whether their initial sort of childhood inoculations, immunizations, and actually, although there may be the occasional flag from a relevant professional, there is, through child in need plans and child protection plans, not always the most comprehensive communication between differing agencies, and that's one of the reasons they can perpetuate and go on for longer than they need to.
And I think you got a point there, Jeff, about talking about medical stuff, because some parents say that they want the child to have immunisation, some will not, and there might be a moral reason, there might be a religious reason, and things like that, and it becomes even more thorn there.
Mm.
But how is that neglect? Because at the end of the day, it's that for a religious reason that certain people would not allow their children to have certain medical attention, right? The average person from the outside would say that's neglect. I mean, and that's putting that child at significant harm. And this becomes quite difficult, and that's why you have to go to court, you know, for that to be determined. But I think that when we're talking about neglect and we're talking about significant harm and things like that, there is a subjective element to it. It's not just as simple as saying, oh, right, just dirty dishes, that means it's neglect. Because at the end of the day, my dirty dishes might be different from your dirty dishes. Right? But I think, you know, a child who's sleeping on a mattress or sleeping in a broken bed and is coming to school, there's certain criteria that I think that we've got to be saying this is neglect. But at times it can be easier to say from in hindsight or from a distance than when you're actually in that, because they will really want to help parents. And sometimes with neglect is that we can see that a parent has having difficulty with their mental health, so that are being subject to domestic violence and all these preoccupations and the trauma and difficulties and emotional harm that parent might be going through, it's actually impacting on their ability to parent. So sometimes social workers try to become saviours or helpers and things like that to help that parent, do you know what I mean? And sometimes you start to have an alliance with the parent rather than the child and different things like that. So it's never that easy to just to say, oh, this is, that's that and that's that. In fact, we say about ACEs, it's not a predictive outcome or not a determined outcome. It's got a predictive element. So I think that when it comes to neglect and harm and things like that, is when our doctors read the CPR, it might just seem so obvious, but at times it's never as easy as when you're actually in the thick of it.
And I think exactly as you point out, it is because of that subjective element of what is a means. A dirty kitchen to me is a different thing to you, is a different thing for anyone. But then you use that word and that's where my mind went. It's actually where it stopped being subjective is where we see harm occur. So actually it is a neglectful situation if a child has come to harm through the state of that home, through missing school, through missing appointments. And I just wanted to circle back to the idea of priorities that you referenced, that in some senses, neglect can be thought of as a parent or main carers prioritising other needs of their own over that of children and meeting their needs. And my mind went to drawing the distinction between the ongoing impact of neglect on a child and perhaps what the doctors need to think about when a child has lived for a prolonged period of time in a very neglectful home environment, what some of the ongoing impact can be. And I was thinking of it in terms also of priorities for that child and what stays with them and their understanding, their internal working models of themselves, of parents, carers, and of the world around them. So for a child who has experienced neglect in the form of an absence of food, an unconscious priority for them will be making sure they have food, and this will be a child, for as one example, that will steal food, will hoard food, will gorge on food, does not want to be hungry anymore.
Yeah, and that we've seen some issues, but it takes months and months, do you know, when a child has got to be helped to be regulated. The fact is that there is food, and that fridge is open, there is food, and there will be food, and we bring in food, and it comes on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, and that neglect is starts to have an emotional and psychological impact on them. Do you know what I mean? About how I think that all the harm that children suffer is a certain element of shame.
Yeah.
Right? And that shame of, especially if you went to school and you know you're getting called dirty and you're getting called things like that, the names that, you know, that stigmatization, or, do you know what I mean? It must be really difficult to be seen to be different from your peers and to be treated differently from your peers. And it may well be that the parent is unwell.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not really anybody's fault in a lot of ways. Do you know what I mean? It's that they don't have the wherewithal, or their parents depressed, or they're mentally ill, and things like that, and they're not getting the support. So, I mean, but in actual fact, it's impacting on that child and their, back to that self-worth, you know, self-esteem, and being the parent's priority. So we get back to that communication, and being with that child, playing with the child, all those different things. If a parent is preoccupied, whatever way, the likelihood of that happening, that play, engagement, enjoyment, communication with your child, is going to be absent.
Yeah.
And that impacts on the attachment.
And is that word priority again, if a child has not been their parent's priority, there will be an internalised message from that that they will carry through on leaving care of that parent, carer, and into an adoptive home, but it just doesn't suddenly go away overnight. And that sense of I am no one's priority will remain, at least in the short term.
Yeah, that's that, you know, when either been, there's extreme, isn't there? There's been the child who's gone off the wall, nobody, I'm more used to being seen as bad or being behavioural and things like that. And that's the way that I function, because the fear and anxiety, that's how they've had to deal with that in the past.
Yeah.
Or the super compliant child who just says everything, yes, no, such and such. And that's their way of dealing with that fear and anxiety. And in a lot of ways, that's what our adopters have really got to, that's the challenge, is how you actually find that balance.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Family Futures podcast, why not subscribe or leave us a review? Want to know more about Family Futures? Visit our website, www.familyfutures.co.uk. Thanks for listening.